The Napoleonic era had come and gone. The French Revolution was already history. But the ripples were still forming, and as the 19th century advanced, the nationalist movements gathered momentum.
Throughout the European continent, there was unrest and discontent. In France, empires and republics followed each other in dizzy succession. Then, in 1848, revolution flared. In Paris, Milan, Berlin, Vienna, Prague, Budapest.
Massive emigration to America followed the Irish potato famine, which had left nearly a million dead. While for England, under Victoria, it was a time of stability at home, expansion abroad. The cult of family life and an empire on which the sun never set.
Colonialism was in its heyday. After the discoveries of explorers Livingstone, Speke and Burton, the scramble for Africa began.
The world was shrinking. Everywhere communications were improving. People read in their papers of the Crimean War with its tragic heroic charge of the Light Brigade and the heroine of the hour, Florence Nightingale. The Indian Mutiny, Garibaldi and his red shirts, the American Civil War and the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. In Russia, the liberation of the serfs.
In 1848, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels published their Communist Manifesto, and the first convention of women's rights was held in New York. A decade later, Orthodox Christians were shaken by the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species.
Inventions reflected the domestic emphasis of the age, the sewing machine and the safety pin, the refrigerator, the washing machine and the lawnmower. From the United States came a strange substance called chewing gum.
Morse invented the electric telegraph, Bell the telephone, Edison and Swan produced the first successful electric lights. More menacingly, barbed wire came into use. And in 1866, a man named Alfred Nobel invented dynamite.
The musical world was enchanted by the operas of Rossini and Wagner and the piano music of Liszt and Schumann. From France came the beginnings of the Impressionist school of art, Pizarro, Degas, Cézanne.
People were reading the novels of Victor Hugo, Charles Dickens, George Eliot, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, the poems of Baudelaire, of Tennyson and Browning, the plays of Ibsen.
From America came the horror stories of Edgar Allan Poe, the humorist Mark Twain, and Melville's Moby Dick, and the strange new poetry of Walt Whitman.
For the Pope in Rome, the revolutions of the mid-19th century were a warning of things to come. It was the end of a lifestyle. The temporal power of the papacy had become an anachronism.
By one of those curious tricks of fate, the last pope to reign over the Papal States was born in them himself.
Pius IX was elected pope in 1846. A popular choice, and known for his liberal sympathies, he was idolized by Italian nationalists, who dreamed of a federation with the pope at its head. But Pius was first and foremost a man of religion, and was not prepared to collaborate with extremists such as Mazzini and Garibaldi. On the 29th of April 1848, the pope made his position clear. He issued a statement declaring that it was not for him to preside over a united Italy, nor was it right for a pope to go to war.
Events now moved quickly. The prime minister appointed by Pius was assassinated, and in no time at all, Rome was in turmoil. Pius fled the city disguised as an ordinary priest and took refuge in Gaeta in the kingdom of Naples.
The Roman Republic lasted 8 months. By the end of July 1849, the French had taken the city, and the following spring the Pope returned under French escort and took up residence in the Vatican.
During his exile, Pius had not been idle. He wrote to the bishops of the world asking their opinion on the Church's teaching that the Virgin Mary had been conceived immaculate. The replies were favourable, and Pius decided to declare it an article of faith. This he did on December the 8th, 1854.
For a decade after the Pope's return to Rome, the Papal States were left in relative peace. But in the northern kingdom of Piedmont, a man named Cavour was working tirelessly towards the unification of Italy. In 1860, papal troops were defeated by the Piedmontese at Castelfidardo in the Marches. By the end of the year, all the papal states had been occupied, except for an area around Rome.
In 1861, the Kingdom of Italy was proclaimed. That same year, on Monday the 1st of July, the first issue of a newspaper, described as political moral, appeared. Its name, the Osservatore Romano.
On the morning of September the 19th, 1870, the Pope said high pontifical mass in the presence of all the foreign diplomats accredited to his court. Afterwards, he offered them chocolate and ices. At 10:02, the Pope was approached by the Secretary of State, Cardinal Antonelli, who whispered something in his ear. The Pope's eyes were seen to fill with tears. He said goodbye to his guests and withdrew.
This was the news the Pope had received. The troops of King Victor Emmanuel II, who had been camped outside the city walls the night before, had made a breach in the old gate of Porta Pia and were at that moment pouring into Rome.
At the other end of the wall, the gate of St. John Lateran, almost off its hinges, was enveloped in flame. Pius waited for his generals to surrender. In a letter to the Committee for the Pontifical Defence, he had given strict instructions. Soon, a white flag was to be seen fluttering above the dome of St. Peter's. The papal states, the robe of Jesus Christ, as Pius called them, were gone forever. And with them, the visible signs of the temporal power of the papacy, went 1,000 years of history.
Ever since his enforced exile at the beginning of his pontificate, Pius IX had adopted the citadel mentality. He was unable to reconcile the church and the modern world, to separate church and state. And so he chose isolation, withdrew into his fortress, becoming a self-styled prisoner of the Vatican. And for 60 years, no pope went outside the Vatican walls.
Pius IX reigned for 32 years, the longest pontificate in history. Pio Nono, as the Italians called him, was much loved for his piety, his simplicity, his sense of humour and his boundless charity, but more than anything, for his immense personal charm.
The culmination of the pontificate of Pius IX was without doubt the calling of the First Vatican Council. It opened on the 8th of December, 1869, in the presence of nearly 800 bishops from all over the world.
The council was scheduled to debate a comprehensive statement on the Church's teaching, but the most controversial issue was the question of papal infallibility, and when the political situation escalated, it was this which took precedence over all else.
A minority of bishops refused to vote for the decree, but rather than cause scandal, they left Rome the day before. On the 18th of July, in the midst of a violent thunderstorm, the council voted the Pope infallible.
The next day, war was declared between France and Prussia, and soon after, the council was adjourned sine die.
We, Pope Pius IX, adhering faithfully to the tradition received from the beginning of the Christian faith, teach and define as a dogma divinely revealed that the Roman pontiff, when he speaks ex cathedra, that is, when he defines a doctrine concerning faith or morals to be held by the universal church, is endowed with that infallibility with which the divine Redeemer has willed that his church should be equipped. If anyone shall presume, which God forbid, to contradict this, our definition, let him be anathema.